Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:04 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 11th, and an interesting day in markets and an interesting week that we have coming up with a number of different data points, both from central banks and on the geopolitical front. That the much anticipated summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un is due to kick off in Singapore. So that is going to be pretty much the middle of the night on Monday for Europe and for the USA, but it'll be morning in Singapore. Well, that's certainly going to be an important consideration. There was a big hack of a South Korean cryptocurrency exchange over the weekend, and Bitcoin is down heavily. I'll talk a little bit about that. Then you have silver on the screen right now. It's up 21 cents. It is on the cusp of testing the $17 level, and that's been an area of resistance on multiple occasions since February. So what happens in the next few days is going to be rather important from the silver market's perspective. Then you have the fact that the UK is going to be introducing Brexit, its Brexit legislation to Parliament this week. The ECB is going to be telling us what their plans are, or whether they're going to stick to their schedule for the end of quantitative easing. And the Bank of Japan is quite likely to say that they're not ready yet to end their quantitative easing. So there's a lot going on, and against all that, the Italians said that they are going to continue to support the euro. But there is certainly a shake-up coming in the European immigration front, since they're turning away migrant ships now from the north of Africa to Italian ports. Well, silver is rather interesting, because it is not so often that it spends such a lengthy period of time doing nothing. And when we look at it over the course of the last few years, the last time it was this inert was at the lows back in 2015 and early 2016. All the way through the last 10 years, silver has been characteristically extraordinarily volatile. That's half the reason people like trading it. It's because when it goes, it really does tend to have big moves. And there are any number of strategies that are primed to benefit from upticks in volatility, most particularly in commodity trading. And silver is at an interesting level, because not only is it back testing the $17 level, but it is back above the trend mean, and it is testing the progression of lower rally highs that has been in evidence really since the middle of 2016. So if it can rally enough to break that sequence of lower rally highs, well, what is the one strategy that has worked really very well over the course of the last 2 years? It's been to sell the rallies. And in order for a new bull market to really take shape, then that successful strategy will need to be challenged, and in fact will need to be demonstrated to no longer work. Then the gold price was relatively unchanged in here today. It's currently sitting around $1,300, and again, this is rather inert from the perspective of gold trading generally, not just over the last couple of weeks, but really over the last few months. And it is right in the region of the trend mean. There is a progression of higher reaction lows evident since the beginning of 2017. There is a saucering pattern to the trend over the course of the last 5 years. So a clear upper dynamic from this level, sustained for more than a week or two, would begin to confirm a return to demand dominance in the region of the trend mean. I might even be tempted to increase my position if I see that. But so far there's been a dearth of upper dynamics, and it really is for the bulls to prove. Then when we look at some of the news items and the investment vehicles that are related to them. Everyone is looking at what's going on between North Korea and the USA, but the South Korean stock market is firming from the region of the trend mean. And despite the fact that we've been treated to a great deal of volatility in currencies over the course of the last year, the Korean won has been almost completely inert for at least the last 6 months. And that's a rather important the differentiator, really, when you look at it versus other currencies. We've had a great deal of volatility in the currency markets, and yet the Korean won has been holding steady versus the dollar over the entire course of that time. Well, one of the more volatile currencies is the pound, and it is back below 114 against the euro, but it was able to rally off its lows intraday, or at least towards the close. Every time the pound trades below 114, it's because there is sentiment brewing suggesting that the UK is going to remain sort of further away from the EU. When it rallies above 114, it's that the UK is going to be closer to the EU. And with the Brexit legislation due to hit Parliament this week, then obviously people are starting to get a little bit antsy about exactly what all that is going to mean. But what does appear to be happening in the UK is that I think the survival instincts of politicians are starting to come to the fore, and if the population are not delivered what they thought they voted for, well, that is going to represent a rather taut environment during the next election, and the political class are always looking to what the next election is going to be, so they don't want to spark a leadership contest at this particular time. I think it is much more likely that the long knives are going to come out when it looks like the negotiations have been completed. That way, anything that or any point that they wish to contest can be blamed on Theresa May. So it's likely that she's probably in the rather difficult position of having to sit through this entire process, only to face an attempt to unseat her when a lot of the questions that remain outstanding have probably been answered. Then, when we look at the yen, well, the Japanese are probably going to be the last of the major currency or central banks to remove their quantitative easing, and the dollar is now back above 110 versus the yen. This was a reasonably dynamic move that we had in here today, and it has confirmed now over the last week support for the dollar around 108. When we think about what has been one of the primary drivers of the stock market over the course of the last few years, well, on the one hand, it has been the fact that the Bank of Japan has been buying shares, but also that the weakness of the yen. And the second section index has firmed again in here today, and it has confirmed now support in the region of 7,000, which on the last retest coincided with the region of the trend mean. So it does look like the second section is in a consolidation phase rather than a topping phase, and that's generally bullish from the perspective of stock market investors generally. The Nikkei has also bounced from the region of the trend mean and is really quite steady now, and in the well, I think as it tests the peak that we saw around 23,000. Again, this continues to look like more of a consolidation above 20,000, and when we think about that over the course of the very long term, this has the potential to be a first step above the base. And if that is indeed the case, if this is a first step above the base and and the 20,000 level holds during pullbacks, well, then we can conclude that Japan is back in a bull market environment after what has been a crushing, well, 30-year period of disappointment for a large number of investors. Then, when we look at what is going on in China, well, CATL had its IPO in here today, and that's the largest producer of batteries. Then the USA opened up its newest supercomputer, and it is now the biggest and most impressive supercomputer in the world, and it has retaken its position as the leading producer of supercomputers back from China. So there is a technological race going on, and certainly part of the reason, or part of the reason for that, is because China wants to compete on the international front, and it needs to have a domestic technology sector in order to be able to do that. And it also wants to be able to leverage its manufacturing prowess to really concentrate on hardware. So they're going to be investing heavily in the battery sector. But I think it is important to highlight that Tesla has got 8-to-1-to-1 batteries out there in the wild in the Model 3, and that it is starting to come through with more impressive production figures for the Model 3. So the share is back above $300, and I think that's meaningful, that it was looking really quite bearish when it was trading below $300, but now it is looking increasingly like a failed downside break. If it can sustain a move above $350, well, then we can conclude we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. So I think certainly what's going on with Tesla is certainly worth keeping an eye on here. Then Panasonic delivered that technology to Tesla, and it is firming from the 1500 yen level. You can also see that there is a progression of lower rally highs, but that 1500 yen has held. Well, obviously, if it can then also sustain a move so that it can break that progression of lower rally highs, well, then we can conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And most particularly since 1500 yen had been an area of resistance on multiple occasions since the year 2009, that would be a rather bullish set of circumstances. LG Chem and Samsung SDI are also rallying in here. So there is enthusiasm about what is going on in the battery sector. But I think it is also worth highlighting that cobalt prices are pulling back, and they are pulling back quite sharply. This price doesn't tend to get updated through the close, but it was down another $500 as of the close in here today. So $80,000 is a big level, but the more important point is that this is the largest reaction we've seen in cobalt prices in years, and that it was an accelerating trend which lost consistency, and now we've got a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. The reality is that with this new technology that's being employed by Tesla, that it is going to get rolled out to just about everybody else within the automotive sector, because it is going to create a competitive advantage for whoever is using it. It means that batteries will be upwards of 75%, if not 85%, nickel, and that the weighting of cobalt is going to halve. And then nickel prices were a little bit weaker in here today, but it was a weak day generally for the industrial metals, and nickel prices remain on a recovery trajectory. Copper prices were not quite able to maintain their momentum, and they have encountered resistance in the region of the peak that we saw back in December. So considering that there is a short-term overbought condition, the likelihood is that we are going to get some pause and consolidation here for the industrial metals. And Wall Street also has a short-term overbought condition. And as the S&P 500 comes back up and tests at that 2800-point level, I think it is worth pointing out that we have had downside key reversals twice from the 2800-point level, one in February, the second in March. And I think people are going to start to ask the question whether we're not going to have another pullback from this area. I think it is also worth highlighting that there are short-term overbought conditions evident right now. So I think the most likely scenario is that we are going to have some pause and consolidation. In fact, every time since the last retest of the trend mean, or at least the low that we saw in early April, every time we've had a short-term overbought condition, we have had a range subsequently. And I think that that is perhaps the most likely scenario that we get for the S&P right now. Then when we look at the Nasdaq 100, it is consolidating in the region of its previous peak, and this continues to represent really quite a bullish chart pattern. And so far, this reaction has been nothing more than a pause. In fact, it is quite a bit smaller than any of the reactions we've seen since the low back in early April. So that is all it looks like. In the absence of a clear downward dynamic, this is only a pause in the region of the upper side of the range. And the Russell 2000 has broken on the upside. And it is mid-caps that are and as well as some of the clear leaders in the technology sector that are leading on the upside. The FTSE 250 has also broken on the upside and is improving upon that performance. Then when we look at the MDAX in Germany, well, the European indices generally have been having a more difficult time of it, but the Mittelstand is bouncing from the region of the trend mean, and as long as it is holding that trend mean, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional upside. Then when we look at the bond markets, well, treasuries have been steadying around, well, the yield bounced from the region of the trend mean, and it has been pausing around the 3% level now for most of the year so far. And this process of ranging has unwound what had been really quite a wide overextension relative to the trend mean. And we also know that back in 2013, during the taper tantrum, we had a great deal of volatility, and we also had some ranging, and ultimately the yield compressed and actually went down to a new low. So that coincided with the evolution of QE3, and then we had, I think, when, well, if we think about what exactly was the impetus for the taper tantrum, it was that it was the end of QE3, but that you didn't have any of the money coming out of the system, and that everything was getting rolled on. And now we are having the roll-off starting. So this is the equivalent of quantitative tightening. But it is also happening at a time where we have this massive fiscal stimulus. So the supply of bonds is increasing at just the time that the Fed is reducing its holdings. So what that suggests is that this situation is quite different from the taper tantrum. And sorry, not the QE3, but the end of QE3. And when we think about it in those terms, then the most likely scenario is that yields are going to move higher. And most particularly because the what I find quite interesting was a graphic that came through from the Federal Reserve of Atlanta today. And when we look at it, let me just make this a little larger. When we look at the graphic, we can see that the Atlanta Fed's GDP now is substantially above where a lot of analysts think that GDP is going to be. And if GDP comes in around those levels, then, and considering this is a federal Atlanta Fed number, well, what that at least says to me is that they're going to raise interest rates. They're going to continue to raise interest rates, and eventually that is going to create an economic contraction, but probably not right away. And the 2-year yield is back up to 2.5%. The yield has bounced rather emphatically from that rather sharp drawdown that we had in May. And I think as long as it is holding that low, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to continued upside. Eventually, the yield curve will become inverted, but not yet. It is currently at 42 basis points, and it popped on the upside at the beginning of this month, and it is now unwinding that pop on the upside. Now that has not been updated. Excuse me. So that what I've just said is not accurate. Let's make sure that is updated. It did pop on the upside at the beginning of the year, and now it is back at 42, almost 43 basis points. Eventually, it is going to go inverted, and when it does so, we will have a lead indicator for a future recession. Then when we look at the high yield spreads, well, they've been completely inert. The only place that they do seem to be rising is in Europe, and default rates are rising in China. So if we were really looking for where are the risks at the present moment, well, everyone is thinking that there's probably risks in the US economy brewing, but they're not urgent. Whereas the rising high yield spreads in Europe and the rising default rate in China Well, those are more present dangers that do not seem to be getting a great deal of attention at all. And that's usually the case with emerging dangers. They don't generally tend to get very much attention. So it is in Europe where we have some risk, and it is in China where there are some risks. Meanwhile, if we look at the VIX index, it has come right back down and it is back below 15. It's currently at 12.5, or just a little bit below that. And the unwinding of the big move that we had back in February remains underway. Generally speaking, it takes time for the yield to come all the way back down to test the lows. So we're not back below 10 yet, but if the environment persists such as it is, then the VIX index will come back below the 10 level, and that is a further, I think, example of just how powerful the stimulus that is going on right now is. That the fiscal stimulus that the U.S. is engaged in is really quite unprecedented, considering that it is occurring at a period where you already have full employment. So that is also and the changes to the tax code are also encouraging companies to bring rather vast sums of money back into the country, and that is also helping to flatter the stock market. And that process is not yet over, and until it is over, then the chances are that the stock market will continue to perform. And I think that there's probably going to be some, or there has certainly got some potential this week for volatility, depending on how the various pieces of news unfold. But as long as we're, I think it is quite clear from the charts that we've addressed in during this broadcast that investors are taking a lot of this news in their stride. And with that, I wish all the best to all of you.